Bankless Nation, it is the last week of May, and what a May it has been, David. We are 1 week off the Ethereum ETF, so I know we're going to talk about that, and we got a lot more in store. But you know what? You were scheduled to be leaving today, I believe.
No, I would have been. I would have been at Consensus. Consensus is happening in Austin right now. I would have been there on like Monday or Tuesday.
All right, tell us about the rib. What happened? Break it to us.
Astute listeners would notice that I'm not at Consensus. I'm at my apartment in New York. So, the fight with Nick Carter was going to be on today, Thursday night, May 30th. Instead, I broke a rib, so I will not be fighting.
Yikes.
Different things happened.
Which rib? Here's the x-ray.
Rib number 8, yeah.
Did you feel the need to post this x-ray just so that haters couldn't say you were trying to dodge the fight with Nick Carter?
100%. 100%. That's why. There was no way I was just going to be able to get away with a tweet saying, oh, I broke a rib. Like, I needed to post an x-ray.
I know. So this was your ninth rib, fully fractured.
Oh, ninth rib, excuse me.
Yeah. How are you feeling?
It broke Monday of last week. So coming up on like 10 or 11 days ago. And then the next 5 days, I broke it on Monday. The next 5 days, it just got worse and worse and worse. I got x-rays on Thursday. It's like, okay, this pain is now very real and not going away.
Yeah.
And then x-rays come back and it's fully broken. And then on Saturday, it was like peak pain, where it's just like getting out of bed was just like a 2 minute long process.
Oh.
Like sneezing sends like shivers down my spine. We're on the mend though, so it was like that's last Saturday. So I've got like 4 days of like feeling better since then.
With a rib break, you just have to ride it out.
There's nothing you can do. There's like you can't get a cast. Like your ribs still have to flex because that's how you breathe. and so like you basically just can't do anything extra. So like walking is fine, but bending over not fine. Doing anything like
how about
even
laughing?
Laying down? Laughing? No. There was a time I was like scrolling through like Instagram reels, just like mindlessly and just like chuckling at some of the stuff. And I just had to stop because it was like funny stuff was like too painful.
Dude, I'm sorry. I know this was disappointing because I had seen the amount of work that you put in for the last 2 months. And mm-hmm. that amount of work, by the way, is why I bet on you, David.
Yeah.
If people don't know, earlier that week, I took out a bet with Kyle Samani from Multicoin that David was going to win. So I know you put a lot of time into this because I saw it. And I saw you mm-hmm. show up to podcast mm-hmm. recordings like battered and bruised.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry this happened. And
same
for Nick, too. I'm sure he was
Nick put in a ton of work. Yeah, he was going through a whole camp. Yeah.
Okay, so will we never know?
I don't know. We are working on things.
Okay.
We are figuring out where like the first ever Nick Carter versus David Hoffman fight will be.
So it's not canceled. It's just
not canceled. It's
postponed.
Not canceled.
Merely postponed.
To an unknown date. But yeah, we both intend to do this thing.
All right, very exciting. Well, let us know on the details around that. David, that's the fight. We got to talk about the fight Ethereum won last week. We are 1 week out from the Ethereum ETF approval. We're going to talk about when we can buy an ETH ETF. Some more paperwork has to get filed. Will that take weeks? Will that take months? Also, I have a question for you, man. Why isn't the price moving?
It's a really good question.
I hope you have answers.
Why hasn't the price moved? In the world of politics, Trump has been doubling down even harder on crypto, and Biden finally coming around. A request for help came out of the Biden administration as it relates to crypto. So crypto, nonetheless, stacking up political wins no matter what side of the aisle you're on. And then Caitlyn Jenner releases Jenner coin on Solana, followed by another of other celeb coin releases. What the hell's going on over there? Are these scams? Are they good or bad for crypto? What are people's takes about them? And then we also have a big fat layer 2 update section. We got a base roll-up framework that just launched, ENS, building its own layer 2 base. The base chain is increasing its capacity. Lots of great layer 2 updates as well.
Before we get in, want to shout out our friends over at Transporter, which is a bridging app that we enjoy a lot. It's based on Chainlink CCIP technology, which is some really cool tech. What can folks do with Transporter right now, David?
They can just bridge all their assets across all the chains, Arbitrum, any EVM chain, really, Arbitrum, Optimism, Polygon, Avalanche, BNB. And then they're working on just adding more chains and more assets, of course. And so Chainlink CCIP, there's a bunch of different ways to build a bridge. CCIP is built with security first, and you'll be able to, and Transport is like the first like consumer app that's built around the Chainlink infrastructure, which is a theme that I think we're seeing in crypto these days, is apps building infrastructure, infrastructure building apps. Finally, we're getting some apps these days. So check it out at transporter.io to just send it.
Just send it. Just send your assets. Explore the world of layer twos. That is the new frontier for sure. Mm-hmm. All right. Give us the new frontier of prices on the week, David. Let's start with our good old friend, the orange coin, Bitcoin. What is the price on the week for Bitcoin in fiat terms, in US dollar terms, David?
Bitcoin starting the week at $68,000, up 1%. Basically flat, call it flat, $68,500 is where we are ending the week with Bitcoin. Ether started the week at $3,800, down 1% to $3,760, $80 on the screen, down 1%.
Can we time out here? Down 1%. Yep.
Down 1%.
Down 1% from last Thursday.
From
the time we were recording the roll-up last week, we didn't know whether the Ethereum ETF was approved. There was speculation.
Correct.
And then
it was approved.
We are 1% up.
No, we're 1% down.
1% down?
And we're 1% down.
That's even more insulting.
We got a confirmed ETH ETF approval, and we are 1% down from that moment. I mean, granted, we had a 25% increase. And so, like,
okay,
a lot of that...
We had a 25% increase that we were celebrating.
About second breakfast.
Yeah, well, like, but like last week, that was on the speculation that we might get an Ethereum ETF. And that was Monday. We called that the God candle. That happened Monday, like last Monday, basically. Not this Monday, but the previous Monday. And now, after approval, we've been basically, like, flat. Did we even break 4K?
No, we did not break 4K.
We didn't break 4K?
We did not break 4K.
What is wrong with these charts? Can I?
I don't know, dude.
Crack.
They're the wrong charts.
All right. Well, you know what? We're not going to dwell on that too much right now because I know we have an Ethereum ETF update a bit later in the episode, and we got to talk about price. We got to talk about when it's getting priced in, if it's going to get priced in, what is going on here. But how about the ETH Bitcoin ratio? What's that looking like?
0.055 flat on the week. Nothing moving there. And then, of course, total crypto market cap coming in at $2.69 trillion, still hovering below 2.7. Still below cycle all-time highs. We're still below cycle all-time highs.
Let's do an Ethereum ETF update. All right, so where we left things last week, we were very optimistic that would be approved. I'm glad that that held up in the roll-up, David. I'm glad we got it approved because that would have been quite an inaccurate roll-up if we didn't. What has happened since that time? So we got the approval on Thursday at 5:30, something like that. We've got lots of Bankless episodes about that approval. What happened this week on the course to actually getting these products out to market?
Nothing actually too much. BlackRock has filed their S-1, which is the second of two steps that comes with an ETF actually being launched. The 19.4Bs getting approved is like 99% of the battle, and then the final 1% is just the S-1s getting approved. So BlackRock has amended their S-1 registration. Interestingly, they have also seeded their own ETF with, I think, $10 million. So BlackRock actually bought $10 million of ETH last week to seed their own ETF. The BlackRock ticker will be ETHA. And so James Safer just commenting on this activity, saying this is almost certainly the activity that we were looking for on the S-1s. Again, once the 19.4Bs or whatever got approved by the ETF, it's basically a assured bet with this small little 1% bump, which is the S-1s. But then James Safer comes in and says this is almost certainly the engagement we were looking for on the S-1s. Following the 19b4 approvals, issuers and the SEC are working towards spot Ethereum ETF launches. So if last week we had, with the 19b4 approval, we were at 99% chance, we're moving towards 99.9% chance. Basically, we're getting there. Yeah.
Okay. And how long will it take? Here's a tweet from Nate G, who asked the question, when will the SEC approve spot ETH registration statements? Nobody knows for sure, but my expectation would be next few weeks. All right, so sometime this summer. He also says 2 to 3 months max. The heavy lifting is already been done.
Maximum.
Yeah, so it's happening this summer, right? We're going to get the Ethereum ETFs trading sometime in the next couple of weeks, and hopefully like it won't take that long. Has the SEC commented at all about this? What have they said? What has Gary Gensler said about this?
Notably little. In when we had the Bitcoin ETF approvals, you actually got to see the votes for the ETF, who of the SEC chairs voted yes, who voted no. This part was actually hidden for some like weird like bureaucratic reason. There's like a vote, is like a decision by delegation or whatever. And then the conspiracy, of course, is that like they were just called up by the Biden administration and told to approve it. And so they didn't want to have the voting process because they didn't want that part like disclosed. And so overall, like the news really has been kind of just incremental because all the news happened last week. And then now it's been basically like trad finance media like CNBC and like Fast Money and all these like
just getting caught up on this,
getting caught up and like getting people's takes, which we're going to cover people's takes when they were like asked to present like what is the Ethereum
ETF. The SEC is just saying nothing, and that is so different from the Ethereum or from the Bitcoin ETF,
because
well,
they
right?
were dragged kicking and screaming. So
A spokesperson for the SEC said the agency won't be commenting beyond the approval order. So don't expect anything. They'll never mention it. It's just an unmentionable product that they just approved, I guess.
Never mind how we are now a political tool from the whims of the president instead of a biased or unbiased neutral like market regulator.
Hey,
that's why they can't comment.
At least it's politically in our favor this time.
Yes.
I mean, I'm I guess I'm okay with that. That's the game. It sounds like where we all have to play. So here's the big question, though. Let's get back to the ETH price. Mm-hmm. So we are flat on the week, basically, even 1% down, as insulting as that is. The big question is this going to be a price driver? What will the inflows look like? We had James Seifert on the podcast last week, and I think he and Eric Balchunas, who are the Bloomberg analysts behind ETFs, think that the flows will actually be pretty small, at least relative to Bitcoin.
They're the more conservative ones,
I'd say more conservative, trending towards, I wouldn't, maybe don't call this bearish, but they think 10 to 20% of Bitcoin's net inflows. Yeah. So that's their take. That's the baseline. I'm going to show you.
I would call them as tampering expectations.
Yeah.
Is what I would say their takes are.
I want to get into maybe some more less conservative predictions, maybe some more bullish predictions about inflows.
Yeah?
Is that okay with
you? You want to get some more liberal predictions?
I do. Yeah.
Let's do it.
Because I think
it
deserves it after like a 1% down on the week. So here's one case study for you. I read this in the Grayscale report this week. So, you know, Bloomberg projects 10 to 20% of Bitcoin net inflows. But if you look at ETP products, so ETP products are what ETFs are outside of the US. Uh-huh. So if you look at, you know, Canada, Switzerland, Sweden for a benchmark, the flows to ETP products and the AUMs have been a total of 25 to 30% of Bitcoin. All right. We're not talking.
So if one mixed ETF in abroad has a dollar in it, 70 cents go to Bitcoin and 30 cents go to ETH.
That kind of thing. So if you look at kind of like AUM and flows and that sort of thing, it's not 10 to 20%. It's more along the lines of 25 to 30%.
Okay.
So my question to Bloomberg, or the more the bull case, is like, why only 10 to 20%? We already have these ETP products outside of the US, and they're getting 25 to 30%. So that's like some bullish fodder for you. Here's another take from an analyst, QCP. And the analysis here is just like, what if Ethereum pulls a Bitcoin? Pulls what a Bitcoin just did.
So it surprises people with demand?
Well, no, just like in terms of price, not demand.
Oh, okay.
So
sure,
ignoring
sure.
spot, just ignoring, like, let's talk about price. So QCP Capital, their expectation is a price of ETH increasing 60% in the coming weeks post the Ethereum ETF. And that would take Ethereum above all-time highs, mm-hmm. which it should be right now, to 6K. Yep. And Bitcoin rose. Bitcoin rose about 66% in kind of like the time after the approval. So Ethereum could rise 60%. That would take us to 6K. That seems like a very simple analysis. You recall Bitcoin went from about 44K to 73K in the 2 months following the approval. If Ethereum just did the same thing, we'd already be at 6K. All right?
Okay.
So, I mean, that still feels conservative, doesn't it? It still feels conservative. Here's another take.
Both Bitcoin and ETH at like a little bit over their previous all-time highs still feel conservative for just a general crypto bull market.
Okay, here's another take. Consider, and this is quantifying, how much ETH is locked away, is in supply. Right. There's less ETH on centralized exchanges than there is Bitcoin right now. So this
is consider how much more sensitive ETH price movements are to the marginal dollar.
Yes, they should be. Okay, so in terms of ETH supply, Grayscale Research believes that around 17% can be categorized as idle or relatively illiquid. 70%. That means 83% is like locked, is not liquid. All right, where is it? It's staked ETH. Look at this. All this staked ETH. All this ETH. That's 32.6 million
there.
All this ETH in smart contracts. Right. Dormant ETH. That's ETH that hasn't been touched in like 5 years. Wow. ETH and ETPs, ETH and protocol. Like you add all of that up, all of that locked away, illiquid ETH, not on centralized exchanges, and you get a huge portion of supply that's kind of like likely not to move, not to be touched. Mm-hmm. So you only have 17% of supply that is liquid and tradable. That's got to have an effect, right?
That I mean, that's been the narrative. There's always been the narrative. It's like there's just very low supply of ETH on centralized exchanges and just really able to be bought. Like not many people are willing to give up their ETH.
I know it's the narrative. And I'm also saying it's in the numbers.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the numbers aren't reflecting in ETH price, David.
The narrative is reflective of the numbers. Like the people who I know who like chant this chant are like Van Spencer.
It's an informed narrative.
It's an informed narrative. Yeah. It's an informed narrative.
This was a great report put out by Michael from the DeFi Report. And he says that the drivers, the main questions to ask if you're trying to compare Bitcoin and Ethereum are this. Number one, what percent of Bitcoin ETF holders might rebalance to Ether? Remember we talked about this with Matt last week? Mm-hmm. There's some percentage that just want a diversified portfolio. And most traditional investors aren't complete Bitcoin maximalists. Right. And they want to buy more of the crypto market. And so they're just going to take a portion of their Bitcoin or their crypto allocation and balance it across maybe 30-70, maybe 50-50, who knows? And so that's the number one source of inflows.
And that makes sense because we know how bad like the ETH Bitcoin ratio has been doing ever since the Bitcoin ETF was approved.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also bounced back marginally from 0.045 to 0.55, 0.055 once it was approved. And so that ratio probably has still legs in it because there's like $60 billion in Bitcoin ETFs and $0 billion in ETH ETFs.
Yeah. And I think there will be some amount of investors who just go to a 50-50 allocation, just 50 on Bitcoin, 50 on Ether. There's also a percentage of investors who might outright opt for Ether instead of Bitcoin. And that's going to be a factor. Some amount out there, it's greater than zero anyway, who will just directly buy Ether. And maybe it's because they were on the sideline and they missed the Bitcoin ETF. So they're like, okay, we missed that one, saw how big it was, didn't anticipate it. Now we're going to pile in Ether. And that's like a sensible trade right now. Mm-hmm. And then you also have momentum hits. So when price starts to rise on Ether, people FOMO in, we get kind of like a momentum type trade. That could be a source of inflows too.
And if the ETH market price on centralized exchanges is indeed extremely sensitive to the marginal dollar, like people say that it is, that reflexivity boost carries more weight because you just get more reflexivity.
Exactly. So let's do some, Michael does some napkin math here, okay? So just napkin math, broadest of strokes. Assume this cycle, we get to a $10 trillion market cap. And I think you and I called a cycle around that. It's a 10 to 15 trillion, something like that. Yeah. So that seems reasonable, maybe
this is
conservative.
A Crisp-Nisky number as well, 10
totally.
Trillion.
Yep. Okay, and so Bitcoin was 43% of total crypto market cap last cycle. Let's assume this cycle it's 40%. All right. Okay. So 43 to 40, pretty reasonable. Uh-huh. And then ETH last cycle was 50%. Okay. Of Bitcoin market cap. Mm-hmm. This cycle, let's assume it's dialed down a little bit. So let's assume ETH is 45% of Bitcoin market cap. Okay.
Okay.
That means cycle,
it currently is at 35%, by the way,
which is low. Like again, that ratio is slower than it should be. That would put, again, not financial advice, subjective opinion, whatever, saltiness. That would put ETH market cap at the cycle peak of $1.8 trillion. All right. So that's roughly a $15,000 price of ETH. Above 10K, 15K price of ETH at cycle peak.
Numbers check out, bro. 15K sounds pretty good. Like I feel like that was our napkin math, like at the very beginning of the bull market.
Still
like,
the napkin math.
What's your sell target? Yeah. And it's like at the highest point, it's like 15K.
We just got to poke the charts.
We're getting closer. We're getting more informed in napkin math as we get closer.
Well, I want you to talk about the ETH narrative. Mm-hmm. That's important. So in order for this napkin math to work out, there has to be demand for Ether among TradFi for this Ethereum ETF if we want to get the flows that we ask for. Let me set you up with this tweet. And I know you've got some comments about the current ETH narrative and what that's shaping up to be in TradFi. But this is Zach Light. I just spoke with a friend who is a big investment manager in New York City. It's the first time he has shown genuine interest in Ethereum before the ETH ETF regulatory barriers made it impossible for them to invest in Ether. Ethereum has now entered the mainstream, but institutions are significantly underexposed due to previous regulations. We may be going much higher and faster than I thought. Now, Zach Light, I spoke to a friend. I don't know what account this is. It's an Anon account, but it kind of captures the spirit of it, which is TradFi is significantly underexposed, maybe due to regulatory concerns.
And this is not just about the ETF getting approved. This is not just about like traditional financial institutions. They can only buy ETFs. This is also about the clarity that Ether is getting because it's now formally a commodity. Something that died last week is the idea that Ethereum Ether might be an unregistered security.
So dead.
While Ryan and I and many in the Ethereum community is like, that's silly. Of course it's not. Like, nonetheless, financial institutions still, like, if there's a 5% chance, a 3% chance that ETH might be an unregistered security, they can't touch it. So now with the ETH ETF, they can buy it as an ETF, but also it's given regulatory clarity as a commodity, which de-risks the asset in a very significant way to financial institutions who might have otherwise have got and bought vanilla spot Ether on a centralized exchange because they have an account. So ETH is also benefiting from that. It's getting tailwinds from that. And the market is currently digesting this. Right now,
David Hoffman, so what narrative do we take to them? This is your tweet here.
This is the big question I think the Ethereum community is kind of processing is how do we sell Ether? How as salespeople of Ether, how do we describe
educate.
It? How do we pitch it? How do we form, like when people are listening to us, how do we sell it to them? People are now interested in the Ethereum ETF. They need to understand what they're actually purchasing. One of the things that we've said on Bankless many times is one of the most bullish things is to be understood. So how do we get people to understand Ether? Like what is a mimetic descriptor about Ether, the asset? And there's a bunch of different ideas that are being floated around. Digital oil is a common one. An internet bond is a common one. Programmable money. Tokenization platform is one that I've seen come and go throughout the years. And so I kind of just put out this tweet. It's like asking, like, let's collect all the ideas. And let's also hear how people are explaining it actually to, like, in the TradFi context.
By the way, in this tweet, did you get other ideas beyond digital oil, internet bond, programmable money, tokenization? Did you get other new, fresh ideas?
Yeah, like dog shit ones. Yeah,
We cannot
go to like BlackRock and say, hey guys, Ethereum is a world computer. This is how you should pitch it to your clients. Like world computer, like no, that generates further questions. That is confusing.
Yeah,
like Ethereum, it's Web3. It's like it's the DeFi backbone.
You know,
these are not good like sales.
I agree.
Of Ether.
I kind of liked Matt Hogan's approach to it, mm-hmm. which is like Bitcoin is digital gold. If you want to believe that, Bitcoin is digital gold. There's more to finance than gold. Ethereum's mm-hmm. everything else. That kind of simple line. Everything else, basically.
Well, so Matt Hogan called it a software platform, which is mm-hmm. actually one of the themes that I'm seeing a lot of people actually illustrate Ethereum to be. Let's kind of go through some of these. So here's Vance Spencer on Bloomberg Technology giving the pitch for Ethereum versus the Bitcoin ETF.
Should we rate this pitch afterwards? Let's play Vance.
What are the principal differences in Bitcoin spot ETF, Ether spot ETF? But I guess what we're actually asking is, the principal difference between an Ethereum-based blockchain and Bitcoin blockchain?
So Bitcoin's digital gold, right? And, you know, you can view the rigidness of its roadmap. You know, there is no future roadmap for Bitcoin being either a feature of a bug or a bug in the sense that, you know, Bitcoin is going to be Bitcoin for the next 100 years. ETH is at the forefront of the tokenization movement that is going to really define the next few decades of traditional finance. We're going to start with the stable coins, the $100 billion of stable coins that are on chain today. But now BlackRock's bringing on fixed income. People bringing on equities. People are bringing on commodities. People are bringing on private credit. And so ETH is at the forefront of that movement. And it's also just a very different asset. You know, it does about $2 to $3 billion of profits per year. It dividends those out. The asset itself is deflationary. You know, it's proof of stake. It's a very different asset than Bitcoin. I would say it's more of a tech-style growth play. And if Bitcoin is digital gold, ETH is Apple. It's building the app store of finance. And just like people thought that, you know, the app store was a toy or a gimmick, you know, 10 years ago, people are going to be really surprised at the uniqueness of the fees and just the scale of the business that ETH is going to generate from the tokenization wave that's taking place. And it's Larry Fink, it's Paul Tudor Jones, it's all these guys. You know, they're all on the stream.
Okay. So he went through a couple of different angles here. He started with tokenization.
Yep.
He then talked about on-chain assets, real-world assets moving on-chain, starting with stablecoins, and then name-dropped to BlackRock and the Biddle Fund.
Yep.
Private credit, which we're doing. So we're talking about real-world assets that TradFi already knows exist coming on-chain to Ethereum. And then he moved into it being a tech-style growth play with an app store-like property, a developer ecosystem.
Yeah, and then did you see they showed the apps on the screen?
Totally. They show the apps on the screen, which like people can resonate with. And so these are mental models that TradFi already has. Like there's already assets out there that they know that are huge. There is already like a developer ecosystem based off of Apple, and Ethereum is something like that. And then Ether, the asset, he name dropped like things like it pays off dividends, which is like actually like technically not true, but meaningfully definitely true. The asset itself is deflationary.
Well, it's kind of true. It's like stock buyback. Is the burn, and then
stock buyback is a stock buyback, a dividend is a dividend.
Sure, but
I'm being like
I get it, I get it. Go on,
yeah, 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 yeah. And I really like that pitch. I really like that pitch, and I think it's actually smart. Even though like when you ask to explain, hey, what's Ether? Starting with tokenization is actually adjacent.
Yeah,
but I don't think it matters. Like I think like if you're talking and selling this to TradFi, like I think tokenization is actually like very resonant with
them. So give it a letter grade. What'd you give
that? I give that one an A.
Mm-hmm. I do too. Well done, yep. Vance.
Well done, Vance. Well done, Vance. Okay, so next up, Anthony Pompliano. This one's much shorter, only 20 seconds long, on Fox Business. Let's hear how Anthony Pompliano pitches the Ether ETF.
Wait, Pomp is pitching ETH now?
A little bit, yeah.
All right,
let's get into it.
just think Bitcoin, I think, is this unique thing that has a very clean story, right?
Sure.
It's a store of value. When you get into these other things, they're technology platforms. So now you start talking about what's the difference between Facebook, Amazon, Google, et cetera. They're all competing for different kind of aspects of the consumer. And so I think when you look at Ethereum, Solana, and many others, they're tech platforms competing with each other. And so the story just isn't as clean as Bitcoin exclusively.
Okay, so still promoting the Bitcoin story as like the unique one and calling all the other ones tech platforms. But another big plus one to
Tech platform, at least. It's still not tech advanced platforms. Level. I mean, I would give a different letter grade to that.
Yeah, we don't have a video for this one. This is just Jeff Dorman on Twitter who says, attention BlackRock, VanEck, Digital Assets, Bitwise. Once the ETH ETF goes live, please erase the words supercomputer, ultrasound money, and internet bond from your memory. This does not resonate with anyone. What does? Ethereum is an app store. ETH is Apple Pay. I kind of throw a grudge with the Apple Pay thing, but like he's doing the same thing, which I'm saying. It's like ultrasound money, like we're not selling. Ultrasound money is for the crypto insider. That is for the crypto settler.
Ultrasound money was so important in 2019, 2020, 2021, like when Ethereum was not recognized as a global reserve asset, store of value the way Bitcoin is, but it was for internal. It was like a frame of reference
for the crypto industry to come to consensus about what Ether is. Is also importantly was also a jab towards the Bitcoiners who bullied Ethereum for years and years and years. It's meant to be facetious
about its issuance policy, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. It was never meant to be like, hey, we're going to pitch BlackRock on ultrasound money.
Well,
that's never how it was intended.
Bitcoin's narrative to BlackRock isn't sound money. Even it's digital gold.
Totally,
it's different.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. Well, Bitcoin, gold is sound money, but you don't actually say those words. You just say gold. Yeah. And so like, again, Jeff's really saying, hey, like all your like crypto native words, like supercomputer and internet bond, like, no, get rid of that. It's a tech stock growth play. And so adjacently, but actually extremely relevantly, Patrick McHenry announced a digital assets, financial technology and inclusion subcommittee hearing. And so this is a subcommittee of the House. The title of this hearing is Next Generation Infrastructure, How Tokenization of Real World Assets Will Facilitate Efficient Markets. So there's a hearing being called to Congress by Patrick McHenry under this title.
And
Next Generation Infrastructure, tokenization of real-world assets, and how it will facilitate efficient markets. I think that that's a lot of words just to say Ethereum. I think that is a great description of what Ethereum is.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's all very cool. And for people who look back at this and be like, it's all so contrived, narratives don't matter, marketing doesn't matter, I'll just point to, like, go back to the 90s and how people were trying to describe the internet. They used all sorts of different mental models and unlocks to try to propagate, help understanding of the internet. Do you remember information superhighway? Some of these sounds like cyberspace.
Something about surfing?
Yeah, surf the web. Surf the web, right? And the idea around that was, like, you can go on your own kind of like a fun experience with, like, you know, search directories and websites, and you'll find things yourself. All of these memetic stories and narratives were used to describe the internet, and it was important. And some of them have a shelf life, and some of them are no longer necessary, but they were very useful in helping people capture and imagine what the potential of this technology is. So we're just doing the exact same thing here, and it's going to be a different narrative that works on a more mainstream TradFi crowd than the narratives that work on crypto natives.
Totally. All right, Ryan, I would like to challenge you.
Oh,
since okay. I'm not fighting Nick, I'd like to fight you about something else.
<Uh-oh>.
I think next Thursday weekly roll-up, we each go and work, do our own homework, and come back next 7 days from now with a 1 minute pitch for Ether the asset.
Ooh.
I will pitch you mine.
To who?
To
TradFi?
To TradFi. Yeah, TradFi is the BlackRock is the audience.
Elevator pitch?
Our best elevator
should
pitch.
Should I wear a suit for this? Should I wear a tie?
And then, yeah, you should definitely wear a suit and tie. that'll help your presentation.
Okay.
And then the bankless audience will pick
Vote?
A winner between you and me.
Oh, yeah. I love this. Challenge accepted, because this won't cost me any broken ribs. This is the easiest.
No, this will not.
This is my kind of challenge.
You don't have
to
go anywhere.
All right. I'm getting in the fight. That's amazing.
Game on.
I'll see you next week then. All right. Be ready, David. What do we got coming up?
Coming up next is Michael Saylor, of all people, warming up to ETH. How is he going to pitch ETH? Donald Trump also doubling down on being the crypto presidential candidate. And how is the Biden administration reacting to that? And also, celebrity meme coin influenza launching on Solana. What does Jenner coin mean for the future of finance? Really important questions.
It's very important.
All of this stuff coming up next, as soon as we talk to some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Kraken, our preferred crypto exchange for crypto assets in 2024. If you do not have an account with Kraken, consider clicking the links in the show notes to getting started with Kraken today. If you want a crypto trading experience backed by world-class security and award-winning support teams, then head over to Kraken, one of the longest-standing and most secure crypto platforms in the world. Kraken is on a journey to build a more accessible, inclusive, and fair financial system, making it simple and secure for everyone, everywhere, to trade crypto. Kraken's intuitive trading tools are designed to grow with you, empowering you to make your first or your 100th trade in just a few clicks. And there's an award-winning client support team available 24/7 to help you along the way, along with a whole range of educational guides, articles, and videos. With products and features like Kraken Pro and Kraken NFT Marketplace and a seamless app to bring it all together, it's really the perfect place to get your complete crypto experience. So check out the simple, secure, and powerful way for everyone to trade crypto, whether you're a complete beginner or a seasoned Pro. Go to kraken.com/bankless to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Have you ever felt that the tools for developing decentralized applications are too restrictive and fail to leverage advancements from traditional software programming? There's a wide range of expressive building blocks beyond conventional smart contracts and Solidity development. Don't waste your time building the basics from scratch, and don't limit the potential of your vision. Cartesi provides powerful and scalable solutions for developers that supercharge app development. With a Cartesi virtual machine, you can run a full Linux OS and access decades of rich code libraries and open source tooling for building in Web3. And with Cartesi's unique rollup framework, you'll get real-world scaling and computation. No more competing for block space. So if you're a developer looking to push the boundaries of what's possible in Web3, Cartesi is now offering up to $50,000 in grants. Head over to Cartesi's grant application page to apply today. And if you're not a developer, those with staked CTSI can take part in the governance process and vote on whether or not a proposal should be funded. Make sure you're vote ready by staking your CTSI before the votes open. Celo is the mobile first and EVM compatible blockchain that's built for the real world and designed for fast, low cost payments worldwide. driving real-world use cases like Opera MiniPay, one of the fastest-growing Web3 wallets with over 2 million users across Africa. Celo is seeing a meteoric rise with over 375 million transactions and a million monthly active users. Not to mention Tether and Circle just deployed native USDT and USDC on Celo, supported by leading exchanges like Binance. And now, Celo is looking to come home to Ethereum as a layer 2. With a game-changing proposal, core contributors at C-Labs aims to leverage Optimism's OP stack, pioneering a transition as the biggest L1 to become a layer 2, with testnet arriving as early as summer 2024. With the Celo layer 2, gas fees will stay low and users can even pay for gas using ERC20 tokens, including native USDC and USDT, sending crypto to phone numbers across wallets using Social Connect. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. Make your voice heard in the Celo forum to shape the future of Ethereum. Follow at Celo on Twitter and explore the ecosystem built for the real world on celo.org/quests.
We've got a tale of two pivots this week, and these might be reluctant pivots. I'm not quite sure, but the first is from Michael Saylor, and I don't know if this is a full pivot, so we'll let the audience decide. But of course, you know, in the past, Michael Saylor has been a laser-eyed maxi, let's say. He's been
mono asset maxi. Yeah.
There is no second best. He has been.
How many chairs are you sitting on right now?
How many chairs are you sitting on right now? Can you sit on two chairs? No. Can you hold more than
Ironically,
one crypto
Ryan
asset?
Has a chair behind him as he sits on a different chair.
Yeah, multiple chairs. I have an entire couch behind us. Of course, you can have multiple chairs in your house. Anyway, that was old Saylor, and he sounded a little bit like this. This is Michael Saylor. Let's play a clip from 3 weeks ago of Michael Saylor. I think he was talking here about the potential for the Ethereum ETF. Let's play this.
When Ethereum is not going to be approved, sometime this summer, it'll be very clear to everyone that Ethereum is deemed a crypto asset security, not a commodity. After that, you're going to see that Ethereum, BNB, Solana, Ripple, Cardano, everything down the stack is just a crypto asset security unregistered. None of them will ever be wrapped by a spot ETF. None of them will be accepted by Wall Street. None of them will be accepted by mainstream institutional investors as crypto assets. This is the one universal consensus accepted institutional grade crypto asset in the world. There won't be another one.
He was very certain of that.
How things change. Wow.
Just Yikes. 3 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago. This came out very recently. This was on Peter McCormick's What Bitcoin Did podcast, post ETF approval. Let's hear from him.
Michael Saylor.
And, you know, so here's what I think. I think 2 weeks before, the world looked like Bitcoin was going to be the only asset securitized and offered as a spot ETF by the Wall Street establishment. And it was going to spread as the one legitimate crypto asset. I think right now, the best expectation is the crypto asset class will be legitimized, supported by both parties. There's an industry. Crypto is an asset class. There's an entire range of use cases, 24/7 digital trading, digital art, NFTs, tokens, you know, decentralized this functionality, DeFi. There's a lot of things that will be considered in a more open light. And Bitcoin will be the leader of the crypto asset class. And if you look at it and say, well, is this good for Bitcoin or not? Yeah, I think it's good for Bitcoin. I think, in fact, it may be better for Bitcoin because I think that we are politically much more powerful, you know, supported by the entire crypto industry, right? They obviously have a lot of political power, a lot of users, and they serve as another line of defense for Bitcoin. So I think instead of someone saying, well, there's one crypto asset, maybe I'll allocate 1% of my money to it, I think mainstream investors might say, oh, there's a crypto asset class now, and maybe we'll allocate 5% or 10% to the crypto asset class, but Bitcoin will be 60% or 70% of that. So I actually think it could accelerate institutional adoption.
We're back to indexing.
It's good for marketing. Yeah, there'll be all these other things that'll happen, and you just kind of have to rethink, you know, all of your models and move forward in a new world.
I don't feel like I need to rethink many models here, but this is maybe Michael Saylor rethinking his model of there is only one crypto asset. And it's funny to me that it took the Ethereum ETF to just have him pull a 180 on this. What, like, how do you make sense of that?
I don't know if he is fully pulling a 180. Like, he's very much still a Bitcoiner, but it is a tampering of his tone. And it's also like also a big tent mentality as well. So being a little bit more inclusive to like the crypto industry, and I think discovering that maybe it's best not to fight them, but to just align with them, because that helps promote Bitcoin, which is true. And I agree with
you. Do you think maybe he saw how powerful politically the crypto faction is
yes.
when they're yeah. unified and working together, and he doesn't want to fight against that current?
Yeah.
As part of it?
Definitely. Yeah.
This is Anthony Sassano making a prediction here, saying Saylor will buy ETH within the next 6 to 12 months.
Now, that's a big prediction. However, Anthony's last big prediction was that the ETH ETF was going to get approved. So I'm not in the camp of like fading a Sassel prediction.
David, why wouldn't he just like rationally, economically, just run the same play back? He basically did this. He started stacking Bitcoin when it, you know, like was on the cusp of kind of like regulatory approval, not a security. He could just take out all of those loans and all those bonds and start buying Ether as well.
Well, yeah,
as a beta play.
But he could also take those same things and also buy Bitcoin.
I don't know. I'm gonna actually.
It's not like he has another company that he's like, oh, I'll just run this playbook with some other company that I have for ETH. Like he only has one fuel tank.
I'm gonna give this some high probability here. I think
above 50%.
Above 50% in 6 to 12.
MicroStrategy owns Bitcoin by the end of 12 months. Oh, excuse me, of Ether.
Yeah, yeah.
Oof, wow, that would be bullish.
Let me just also make out another call. Michael Saylor, I think, should just come on Bankless. He hasn't been on Bankless before. That will be the signal that the Band-Aid's been ripped off, that the hatchet is buried with like Ethereum hating. If he comes on Bankless and gives us the case of why Ethereum is good for Bitcoin, we'll do that podcast for sure.
I don't know if he wants to give that take. I don't know if he wants to give that take.
Well, he will when he's ready to buy Ether, I think.
Yes.
Maybe shortly after.
If he is buying Ether, then he will likely also come on the podcast.
Let's talk about some more presidential pivots. And I guess we have to class Trump as this, given that a couple of years ago he was very anti-crypto.
Right.
But he's here just in the past few days, doubling down on crypto yet again. Let's watch this clip.
I will ensure that the future of crypto and the future of Bitcoin will be made in the USA, not driven overseas. I will support the right to self-custody to the nation's 50 million crypto holders. I say this with your vote. I will keep Elizabeth Warren and her goons away from your Bitcoin.
Wow.
And I will never allow the creation of a central bank digital currency. I will also...
David.
Wow.
Self-custody.
He said the word self-custody.
He said, keep crypto, Bitcoin away from Elizabeth Warren and her goons.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
these
are
the talking points
for him.
But these are the talking points that crypto, like the crypto community really wants to hear.
These are not Trump's words. This is a Trump advisor telling him what to say, which is fine.
100%.
I'll take it.
100% it is. And the word self-custody. I mean, that is
the word
ethos.
Self-custody came out of a presidential candidate's mouth. It's like pretty damn cool. He actually didn't stop there. This was even more like niche in crypto native. Donald Trump says that he vows to commute the sentence of Ross Ulbricht to time served if he's elected president. So Ross Ulbricht, the Dread Pirates Roberts of the Silk Road, famous case. He's in jail for life, basically. And Donald Trump says that Ross Ulbricht is like a martyr of libertarian Austrian values, the Bitcoin movement. He like the whole like Silk Road was actually one of the first big Bitcoin apps to use Bitcoin. Just like a hero in the libertarian space. And since he's already served 10 years, Donald Trump is saying that's enough. And he will pardon Ross Ulbricht and let him go free, which is like, again, deeply crypto native, very Bitcoiner of him. David Bailey from Bitcoin Media is an advisor to the Trump administration. So like, if it's not David Bailey, it's somebody like him who's like telling Trump to say these things, and it's like definitely working.
Just like months ago, I don't think crypto was on the election issue list of issues at all. And now this is quickly turning into like a crypto election. At least crypto is one of the election issues. that Trump is trying to differentiate himself on. And so, like, the big question is, what's the game theory? So, like, what does Biden do next?
Right.
And this is interesting. I don't know if you catch this article yesterday. This is from The Block. The Biden campaign ramps up crypto industry outreach and surprising tone shift. Okay, so apparently the Biden reelection campaign is reaching out to people in the industry, people in crypto, for guidance on crypto community and policy. So they're reaching out to people in crypto saying, how can we
please
help with our
help. We need help.
Help us say like words like self-custody and be like crypto and like do the thing that Trump is doing. This is what the campaign is actually advising Biden to do. So,
I think someone should step up for. Like, I know Biden leaves a very bad taste in people's mouths, but like, we need both people, like people in the crypto industry. We want somebody on whispering in Trump's ears. We want somebody whispering in Biden's ears. Shouldn't matter. Yep. We just want both political parties to have a strong crypto advocate telling them what to do.
Crypto should not be a partisan issue, right?
Totally.
It's complete American values here.
Granted, Donald Trump's like ability to like move very quickly on this is winning him the crypto vote regardless, because Biden is so like tepid about it and he's confused.
The Biden administration's track record under Elizabeth Warren has been absolutely terrible for the past couple of years. And I think it'll be very telling. So you remember the SAB 121 repeal? Mm-hmm. That is still waiting on Biden's desk for signature or veto. And he has previously said he's going to veto it. This is like not too long ago. It's like 3 weeks ago. He said he would veto it. The deadline, David, is Monday, June 3rd. And the big question is, will he veto it? Or will he let it pass? If he does nothing, by the way, it de facto passes. Right.
Hayden gives a take here. Hayden Adams, he says, the too late / this is pandering to the crowd, people about the Biden pivot, is missing the point. The Democratic establishment finally realized being anti-crypto by letting Warren run financial policy will lose elections. This is a big deal. No, nothing politicians care about more than winning elections. It's a new era. So I think there's some people here like who's saying like it doesn't matter, ignore Biden, he doesn't matter, like Trump is the crypto president candidate. And Hayden's saying like both can be crypto candidates, and that's good for us.
Yeah, certainly wins in our favor as well. And David, we've got more congressional hearings as well. Our bow tie evangelist in Congress, Patrick McHenry, you were mentioning that hearing on digital assets and financial technology, and you gave the name of it earlier. That is happening next week as well.
Wednesday, 9 a.m. Eastern Time, June 5th. It's a hearing. It's a congressional hearing, so it's probably going to be boring. But I'm pretty sure this is the first ever congressional hearing that's strictly about crypto other than the audit of the FTX collapse. So ignoring that one, this is the first one that's like solely about crypto. That's also about crypto, the technology, not crypto, the fraud. And so that's whatever conversations come out of that, we'll hear about Wednesday of next week. It's also like how exciting that's going to be. It's going to be determined about who they call up to like testify. Like you could see like BlackRock or like Securitize, anyone doing tokenization, like advocating and like giving their testimony for crypto. And so that would be pretty like interesting to hear.
Yeah, I think it's spreading education and awareness. And he'll get much more eyes on this hearing than previously, since it is an election issue.
Totally.
All right, let's talk about celebrity coin influenza. I have been paying almost no attention to this. I'm not sure I even want to in this segment, but let's give it a go. What in the world happened with Caitlyn Jenner and these celeb coins last week?
Okay, so Caitlyn Jenner on Sunday randomly just tweeted out an address and a pump.fun link and about her token, the Jenner token, hashtag Jenner, that she launched using pump.fun on Solana. And everyone was like, what the hell is going on? What the hell is Caitlyn Jenner doing launching a token on pump.fun? Is this AI? Is this an AI scam? Like, what's going on?
People were like, her Twitter account.
It was her Twitter account with a video of Caitlyn Jenner in a robe, by the way, with like her initials on the robe. Can we actually play this video? Because it's like kind of surreal.
Sure, I guess so. Here we go. Caitlyn Jenner saying this is not a deep fake. Let's play.
Hi, everybody. This is Caitlyn Jenner here. I know. Actually, I've been running around all day playing golf, and Sophia, my CEO, has been doing a wonderful job with my new crypto coin. Yes, this is for real. Get involved. It's going to be very good. So
that's a great,
I'm very excited about it. And I'm looking forward to the future for the next couple of hours. So keep the sales going. This is exciting.
Yeah.
Did she just say, I'm looking forward to the future for the next couple of hours?
Keep the sales going. This is exciting. My CEO is doing a great job. I'm excited. Saying nothing about the coin.
Okay.
And so... Turns out, okay, so the market cap of Jenner got up to $43 million in the first 24 hours. I don't know what the market cap is now. Six million. Later, she discovered, she said that this dev, which maybe like approached her to like give her this idea, Sahil, was like the dev helping them like do this coin. Sahil has apparently done this a number of times with other celebrities. He will just like psyop them into launching a coin. And then like being the dev, he kind of like runs off with the liquidity. Apparently he's done this a few times. I don't know the full story. So Caitlin like discovered this. And she says, fuck Sahil, excuse my language. He scammed us big time after being told that like Sahil is behind the Jenner token. You would think that she would stop, but she
this
has...
This is like an hour later, David.
This is an hour like, later. Yeah.
Yeah, 8:20 was the original. And then, let's see, 9:42 p.m. She tweets, he scammed us.
Nonetheless, she like doubles down on her own token. And so she has like further tweets and videos, just like the one that we watched, about her like talking about her token. It's Solana summer, hashtag Jenner isn't going anywhere but up, especially now that son of a bitch isn't involved. I bet he won't be launching any more celeb coins again based on the conversations I've been having, not that you know what's going on in the crypto world. I hate to do this, Ryan, but there's a second clip of her launching a token on Ethereum. So
this is like the very next day or two days later?
This is the next day. This was yesterday. This was Wednesday the 29th.
All right, let's watch this cringe here.
Jenner is now live on Ethereum. Let the trading begin.
Oh, that was a big announcement. That was it. Let the trading begin.
You might think that she bridged over her Solana Jenner tokens to the Ethereum network and like launched the token with liquidity on Ethereum. Sure. If you thought that, you would be wrong. This is
it's a separate
Jenner token.
Not even linked
to
liquidity in any
way. Not even linked. No, it's just a new token.
What is this? We're looking at a tweet from CoffeeZilla showing the go directly to jail Monopoly card here.
Yeah, well, so CoffeeZilla is like the YouTuber who exposes like scams and frauds. Yeah. He like did a whole bunch of stuff in crypto when we were doing that like last cycle. She's attracted the attention of CoffeeZilla, which is all I have to say. I wish the story ended here, Ryan, but it does not. Do you know who Iggy Azalea is?
Oh, yeah. I know Iggy, for sure.
Oh, I don't. I actually don't know who it is. She's a singer?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, just to recap the story, I put this into Grok on Twitter. Iggy Azalea has recently made waves in the crypto world with the launch of her meme coin, Mother Iggy, hashtag mother, on the Solana network. However, this venture has not been without controversy. Allegations of insider trading have surfaced with claims that insiders bought a significant portion of the coin supply before its public launch, resulting in profits of approximately $2 million. So you get the gist. Like, if you go onto Iggy Azalea's Twitter, it's like manic tweeting about
just
like crypto shitposting and shilling her token. Just like blatant shilling, like it's going up, it's going to go up, like mother. Yeah. And so it's like straight meme coinery. And like, again, nothing against meme coins specifically, but with a central like minter and then promoter with celebrity influence of a token.
It feels so gross.
It just feels so gross.
Yeah, like there's nothing to these tokens.
There's nothing
there's
to
no
celebrate
cultural
here.
Artifact. It's just somebody like basically shilling, using their influence to just like dump on people who are buying this thing, right?
Totally. Yeah. They could have done it through Friendtech. They could have opened up a Friendtech account and given like their token holders some utility
some
utility. But no, it's just straight token. Just straight token.
Okay, this is someone put together a list of all of the celebrity coins. I guess maybe no. That is this the NFTs from previous cycle?
Both NFTs and tokens. Yeah.
So this is like the latest manifestation of celebs just launching just super lazy NFT projects or tokens, and this is kind of like the ROI and how like Kevin Hart's on here, Ozzy Osbourne is on here, Floyd Mayweather, Chris Brown, Mila Kunis, all of these things, and they're all like either dead down 100%. or like down 90%, 98%.
I would like to say it's really hard to get to negative 100% in crypto. It's really hard to go to zero.
This never works.
You usually stop at 98 or 99%.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, Mila Kunis, even the Stoner Cats thing, at least that had some artwork. That was like a bit more effort than something like this. But even that is down 100%.
Well, it's actually nothing. That's out on a technicality. The okay. Mila Kunis and Stoner Cats NFT was actually the highest performer here because the SEC made them give the money back.
Because
she actually did like a full like good faith effort of trying to like make a weird TV show. Like you can judge how weird it was.
The SEC came after, I forgot, Mila Kunis was in the so the SEC is going to come after these things, right?
I'm sure Gary Gensler would love this. Is like free real estate for Gary Gensler. Yeah.
Well, it's like perfect. I mean, he targets like he goes after celebrities. These are the ones that are making that. And this is very clearly like shady, like shilling, like pump
like
dump
some type. Something is illegal here. I don't know what.
It feels super gross.
It feels super gross.
All right, well, that's the future of finance. We knew it was gonna end here, right? We knew it was gonna end here on the meme coin roller coaster. What do we got coming up?
Anyways, back in the layer two world, Ethereum gets its first base rollup. What the hell is a base rollup? Solana on-chain governance votes to change the economics of Solana. Interesting story. And Gemini Earn holders are getting their money back. And should they be happy about it? Or is it more like FTX? We'll unpack that. But before we get to all of that and more, a moment to talk about some of these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, like Mantle, the layer two with Yield. Go check out Mantle. There's a link in the show notes. New projects are coming online to the Mantle Layer 2 every single week. Why is this happening? Maybe it's because Mantle has been on the frontier of Layer 2 design architecture since it first started building Mantle DA, powered by technology from EigenDA. Maybe it's because users are coming onto the Mantle Layer 2 to capture some of the highest yields available in DeFi and to automatically receive the points and tokens being accrued by the $3 billion Mantle treasury in the Mantle reward station. Maybe it's because the Mantle team is one of the most helpful teams to build with, giving you grants, liquidity support, and venture partners to help bootstrap your Mantle application. Maybe it's all of these reasons all put together. So if you're a dev and you want to build on one of the best foundations in crypto, or you're a user looking to claim some ownership on Mantle's DeFi apps, click the link in the show notes to getting started with Mantle. Launching a token? Worried about the IRS? Talk to Toku for 5 minutes to learn how to save hundreds of thousands of dollars for you, your team, and your investors. Now, if you do an initial consultation, Toku will cover the cost of your token valuation, which is what you need for your launch. So don't wait. Reach out to the team right now at team@toku.com. That's team@toku.com. Arbitrum is the leading Ethereum scaling solution that is home to hundreds of decentralized applications. Arbitrum's technology allows you to interact with Ethereum at scale with low fees and faster transactions. Arbitrum has the leading DeFi ecosystem, strong infrastructure options, flourishing NFTs, and is quickly becoming the Web3 gaming hub. Explore the ecosystem at portal.arbitrum.io. Are you looking to permissionlessly launch your own Arbitrum Orbit chain? Arbitrum Orbit allows anyone to utilize Arbitrum's secure scaling technology to build your own Orbit chain, giving you access to interoperable, customizable permissions with dedicated throughput. Whether you are a developer, an enterprise, or a user, Arbitrum Orbit lets you take your project to new heights. All of these technologies leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum. Experience Web3 development the way it was always meant to be: secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free. Visit arbitrum.io and get your journey started in one of the largest Ethereum communities.
All right, let's get into the layer two news. This update is also brought to you by Mantle. So let's talk about total value locked. We are close to all-time highs, total value locked on layer twos. One thing that I observed, David, in the top 10 here is the ZK EVMs have been kind of lagging. So if you look
in
at
TVL,
like,
you mean?
In TVL, if you look at the market share of optimistic rollups versus ZK, it's like 95% to like 5% or 90% to 10%, something like that. And I do sort of wonder if maybe the ZK Sync era token launch will start to change that. But so far, optimistic rollups are like they have an early lead. I don't know if you have any commentary on that or thoughts on that. It does seem like ZK technology is like the better technology in the fullness of time, but they have had a slower start compared to optimistic rollups.
Yeah, I think that's the right commentary. Like the $19 billion that's on Arbitrum is just an absolute gargantuan. And it's just like liquidity begets liquidity, early movers. They just get a big moat, big moat.
Well, one of those early movers, number three, rather, in terms of total locked value is Base. Mm-hmm. And they just brought an update that expanded Base's capacity by 25%. What's cool about this, of course, is no Ethereum hard forks were required for this.
Nope.
They just upgraded the Base chain.
Just a Base hard fork.
Yep. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so this has been part of the plan for Base for a while, to target to 1 gigagas. Is that right? So we're at 6.25 milligas. 1,000 milligas will be 1 gigagas. So we're at 6.25. We want to get to 1,000. 6.25 and 1,000 feels very far away, but not when you increase capacity by percentages every single time. So 25% increase this week. And then he says that they are looking, Jesse says that they will look to do 7.5 milligas later this same week.
That's so cool.
Later this same week. Now, what also came out of the base ecosystem last week was this tweet from ZeroX Designer, who says, it's cheaper to send money on Base than over Venmo. And this is actually an announcement from Venmo saying that starting July 1st, so we got 1 month, transaction fees for receiving payments tagged by the sender as goods and services will be added 2.99% per transaction. And so that's actually kind of a hefty amount. And so using USDC on Base is now under a penny. And now using Venmo is like 3%. So use Base.
That's awesome.
Instead.
Yeah. Very,
honestly,
very cool.
Venmo, like keep going with those fees, baby. Let's jack those fees up.
It's very cool to see like Base bandwidth, basically, you know, mm-hmm. just rise on a weekly basis. You can just literally watch the bandwidth increase. That's not the only Layer 2 update we got, though. ENS has announced that they are going to roll out a rollup, ENS V2, as part of their V2 update. So what is an ENS rollup? What are the benefits of this, and what are their plans?
Well, I think the benefits are pretty simple, right? Like just lower gas fees for managing your ENS, which is a relatively like contract heavy application. So just, you know, lower fees, faster UX, faster transactions. Every .eth name will have its own personal registry. So it gives users more control over the ownership of their names. And so I actually own I own Hoffman.David.eth, which the owner of David.eth sent to me. And so he sent me Hoffman.David.eth.
Got a subdomain.
Yeah, so and so he, as the owner of David.eth, can control that a little bit more granularly with the ENS layer 2. I would call this an app chain. This is an app chain for ENS.
Yep.
They are still looking for their framework provider, so I'm sure every single framework provider, Optimism, Arbitrum, Polygon, ZK-Sync. Yeah, they got to pick a framework. They're not going to roll their own layer 2. I'm sure they're just going to pick something off the shelf. And so I'm sure everyone is like vying for trying to be the ENS framework. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What I love about this too is they're improving the multi-chain interoperability, and they're using some Chainlink technology to do this because the ability from any chain to just send to David.Hoffman, is it Hoffman.David.eth? You could just do that.
Hoffman.David.eth, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You do that. You should be able to do that from any chain, and V2 will make that possible as well.
And then last in the layer 2 updates, Tyco is now live on mainnet. What is Tyco? Tyco is a ZK EVM, but it is also a based rollup. So we all like the ZK EVM because everything's going to the ZK world and eventually, but the based rollup is the first of its kind. That's kind of the shiny new technology that Tyco's bringing to Ethereum. A based rollup is a rollup that uses Ethereum validators as sequencers for the rollup itself. So it actually kind of starts with a leg up in terms of decentralization of the sequencer, but then it also gets to tap into the state of the Ethereum layer 1 as it produces blocks on the Tyco layer 2. And so liquidity between like Uniswap on Ethereum mainnet and liquidity inside of Tyco,
it's all the same pool.
Not perfectly the same pool, but like highly interoperable. And so like Tyco and the state of Ethereum layer 1 have like a very strong bond because the operators of both networks are the same people, which are the Ethereum validators, which is pretty cool. And they're also being pretty explicit about their token launch. They're saying they're going to distribute 5% of its 1 billion supply a few weeks after mainnet goes live. How they intend to distribute their token, TBD. That's a really early in the lifespan of a network to also release their token, but hey, who knows?
I kind of wonder what Tyco will look like on L2B. Well, just like because it's using a decentralized sequencers out of the gate, mm-hmm. does it have like all the pie slots full?
That's part of the pitch of Tyco. Is like they get some green slices.
It's going to launch with training wheels at first. So it'll be like multi-sig upgrade. Yeah. So like that won't be green. Those slices won't be green, but it does have decentralized sequencers, I guess, right out of the gate. Very cool.
Okay, speaking, going into the Solana world, there was a on-chain governance vote in the Solana world to change some of the transaction economics of Solana. And so maybe people actually don't know that Solana has an on-chain delegated proof-of-stake coin vote governance mechanism. This has been like a model for chain governance that like Tezos is like, I think, pioneered on-chain governance in the first place. Solana being delegated consensus, delegated proof of stake also has a very similar mechanism.
So that means people can vote on improvement proposals, yes? Or like there can be a token vote.
So you as a SOL holder delegate your SOL to a validator, and that validator participates in an on-chain governance vote. And so all the logic for that vote is contained and then activated on-chain.
Yeah. Token vote governance. Got it.
Yes. Okay. So previously, the transaction dynamics of Solana would take 50% of the transaction fee for a Solana transaction and burn it. It's very similar to EIP-1559, just raw 50%. Instead, now because of this vote SIMD-0096, Solana is like the Solana improvement proposal equivalent, passed with 77% in favor, that instead of that 50% being burned, is being passed to the validators as just additional compensation. Some takes from Solana leadership like Anatoly Mert have indicated that this vote makes sense and it should go through for various like more nuanced reasons. Some other people have said that this is validators being greedy, and this will only further the inflation of SOL, the asset. I don't think either Ryan or I are informed about like the depth of these conversations.
Yes.
And
well,
like what's going
take?
On. My take is like, I don't like on-chain governance.
Why? It's just because the elites, like the validators, those with the most tokens, can really influence the outcomes of what gets shipped in a feature. And when it's an economic outcome, every validator's, do you vote yes?
Yeah, would you like to vote yourself into more further fees? Yeah.
Yes.
And so sure, there can be legitimate reasons, but it's like, we have seen delegated proof of stake systems before, and there it's like not a stable equilibrium in terms of governance. Despite the vote passed, so 77% approval, but of who? Like of the entire Solana stakeholder set, or of like 77% approval of just like the validators, and like the average user is unaware, uninformed, doesn't care. Even if they don't care, like I would say, like it's still an important decision to measure the stakeholders.
That is a very Ethereum take of you, David.
It's a very Ethereum take of
if me. You want an Ethereum versus Solana take, okay, we have the ultimate debate that is going to be released. In fact, it might be already available for Bankless
premium,
listeners on
premium
a premium
listeners,
fee.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
If you are a citizen, a Bankless citizen, if you're not, you should just upgrade for this episode so you get early access to Anatoly versus Justin Drake. And let me tell you, it gets a bit spicy.
Yeah, it's It's a little spicy at the end.
It starts off. Have you ever seen those Hot One interviews where they like eat the?
I've like watched one of them. Yeah.
Okay, so like they eat the chicken wings, and the sauce gets hotter and hotter. It starts off and it's super mild, right?
Right.
Like complimenting one another. Uh-huh. And it's so spicy towards the end. Anyway, that is a place to go check that out, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it. David, Gary Gensler took another L last week.
Oh yeah, right.
Can you believe?
Well, actually, just taxpayers actually.
Well, it's all of us take an L when Gary takes an L. So this is your taxpayer dollars at work. Judge Shelby ordered the SEC to pay attorney's fees of $1 million and receivership fees of about $750K after finding that the commission engaged in bad faith conduct. This is a judge saying this. All right, this was a court case that was going on in the background. Let's see. It was SEC filing a complaint against DebtBox. I don't know all of the details, but this is a judge basically saying that the commission engaged in bad faith conduct and said it was so bad that the SEC actually has to pay the defendant's attorney fees. All right. Let me tell you, if Gary was on a crusade to like just end SEC legitimacy with respect to crypto in like one term under his tenure, like he's well on his way to doing that.
All right.
The courts are just like throwing this trash out and suing, like counter suing him as well, counter penalizing the SEC.
I'm pretty sure the SEC lobbied the administration for an increase in budget, and having to be forced to pay somebody else's attorney fees, $1.8 million, is not really good evidence to support your case.
Look, okay, the judge is saying the SEC's case was marred by false statements and misrepresentations. Lying. They were lying. That's what that means.
Not great. I mean, I'm happy that the reign of Gary Gensler will hopefully be over with both parties being pro-crypto now. I would have liked a little bit more justice, but I'm also happy just for him to be shown the door as soon as possible.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know if he's gone yet. I think we haven't heard the last, actually. So to be continued. We're feeling high on recent wins. And speaking of recent wins, David, today, Gemini Earn users, this is as of yesterday, I believe, received 2.18 billion of their digital assets in kind. So Gemini was one of those Earn programs that was locked. Like if you had your funds in Gemini Earn, you couldn't withdraw it. It like went down
because
same
of
time.
The genesis from DCG shenanigans with Grayscale and GBDC and all that stuff.
Yeah. If you had funds in here, you know.
Three Arrows Capital blew up, which blew up Genesis, which locked up Gemini Earn's customers. Yeah.
Okay, so what's happening here? What's the good news?
A 232% recovery of assets. And so users are being paid in kind, unlike FTX, where users are being paid at the, like, you get your Bitcoin back at a $16,000 Bitcoin.
As if you sold in November 2022.
Exactly, yeah, probably incurring a tax event. So if you had one Bitcoin in the Gemini Earn program, you will receive one Bitcoin. So congrats for holding. which is great.
Guess who had some Bitcoin. I had some crypto, at least in Gemini.
Which crypto assets? Being?
It was Ether. Any Bitcoin. I may have had a sliver of Bitcoin, but it was Ether.
Congrats for getting your Ether back.
It's cool. It was a forced hold.
I don't think you have a problem with holding your Ether.
Yeah, that's true. I don't. But I mean, I think people should be excited about this outcome. I guess the side benefit is Gemini forced them to hold through the entire bear market, and now they get it. They get it back in kind.
That's pretty cool. Still, continue to hold. Please continue to hold.
Well, that is actually a question of, how much of this? There's $960 million worth of Bitcoin and $600 million of ETH that get unlocked as a result of this. And so, will retail users dump some of this? Maybe that's why we're down 1% on the week, David, terms.
Please hold. Please hold it. All right. In privacy news, this is actually pretty interesting. Privacy protocol Railgun has surpassed $1 billion in volume after the Tornado Cash crackdown. Railgun, I think this might be the first time we've ever mentioned Railgun. It's a ZK privacy app. I think it's actually like a strict technological improvement to Tornado Cash. Have you ever used Railgun before, Ryan?
I have not. I think that's not illegal yet, right?
So it's not illegal yet.
If I said I did use it, I won't go to jail.
Correct. I have
for now.
I've used Railgun and it's great. It's great. Okay. Great way to get to.
You are no longer a Tornado Cash user.
I can't be, but I have used Railgun at times to put Ether from one wallet to a different wallet.
And it's legal. It's not on the OFAC sanction list.
Super legal, not on the OFAC sanction list. Huh. I'm sure it will be. Because, it sounds like North Korea has also discovered Railgun, and it seems that the Lazarus Group has pushed some amount of money. We don't have it in my notes, but it seems like the Lazarus Group has actually discovered Railgun, and they are now using Railgun. Yikes. Maybe I won't be using that anymore, preemptive.
The thing is, they're still using Tornado Cash, because Tornado Cash is not shut down. You know what I mean?
Correct. Yeah.
When you make a privacy protocol on an unstoppable network illegal, then you just make it illegal for the good guys.
Right.
Like North Korea is not going to be like, oh, it's OFAC sanctioned. I guess we can't use it.
Why do they care about privacy in the first place? Actually, like, what are they going to do? why do they need privacy? It's North Korea.
I guess so they can mix it and sell it.
They have to sell it. They have to
de-identify their accounts. Like, how do we know it's North Korea? I mean, if privacy was working perfectly, then we wouldn't even know it's Lazarus Group or North Korea in the first place.
Yeah. Well, so like they're still using Tornado Cash, but like any amount of privacy, there's a bandwidth there of like the TVL and the protocol. So like Railgun and Tornado Cash have the same concept of this like a privacy mixing. Set.
Yeah.
And so there needs to be like innocent bystanders for like the nefarious actors to actually leverage as like a shield. And so if it's all North Korea in Tornado Cash, then it's actually not helpful.
Yeah.
There
is something that's different about Railgun versus Tornado, though, is Railgun uses privacy pools, like that concept of a separate pool. Which makes it harder for bad actors to join. So
cool.
I think there's some sort of segmentation. I'm not sure exactly how that works, but it's like a It's an improvement on Tornado Cash, which kind of commingled everything. Does that make sense?
Ah, I see. Yes, 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 yes. Cool.
So okay, there could be some hope here.
Yeah.
Depends what OFAC and Treasury actually want to do. And one case to watch for all of this is Roman Storm's case, which motions are happening. A hearing is set for July 12th. So we'll be talking about that soon. That's one of the two Tornado Cash developers, the one being prosecuted in the U.S. This is a district court of the Southern District of New York. So that's one to keep an eye on. I think it's going to be a pretty monumental court case in the U.S. with respect to, do we get privacy with our crypto peer-to-peer transactions or not. One PSA as we close this out. David, we launched, Bankless launched a Warpcast frame. Did you know this? For our Claimables product?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you can now go on Farcaster or Warpcast, the client, and check your Claimables right here in a frame. We talked to Dan Romero when frames first came out, thought they were super cool technology, and our dev team has just like put this together. So now you can go like this. I'm doing this on screen. You can connect your wallet, click, check. And then for me, it found two claimables, and then you can view and claim. Actually, I did this last week, okay, for the first time. For some reason, I had my alerts on the Bankless Claimables app off, so I wasn't receiving email alerts. So I went and I checked this. And lo and behold, I had a claim worth $1,800 in there.
Hell yeah. A token or an NFT?
It was a token. I'm not going to say which one because I sold it. I sold it for you. Yeah, but it was sitting there waiting for me. And this is the thing. You can't be everywhere at once. You can't watch all of your wallets at the same time. So I have a whole bunch of my wallets in this Claimable tool. And this automatically finds Claimables for you and throws it your way. So this is free. It's free. It's available for everybody. You know,
go click the frame if you're on Warpcast.
Click the frame. David, what do we got? Close us out. Meme of the week.
Meme of the week. Meme of the week. This is kind of a dig at Solana. So this is the guy looking at the butterfly saying, is this blank meme format? And it's Solana Bros looking at political and racist meme coins, blockchain only fans, and celebrities running pump and dumps asking, is this mass adoption? Is this what mass adoption looks like?
Is this Austin? Is this a tweet from Austin from Solana saying Iggy is single-handedly starting a revolution? Is he being serious about that?
If you scroll down, he goes, but most definitely revolutions don't end well. So he's both promoting Iggy's shenanigans and also saying, but also I'm not endorsing it.
Yeah. All right. That's fair enough. And we should end with the risks and disclaimers. Of course, celebrity coins are risky. Don't buy those things.
Money in celebrity coins.
Just don't do it. You don't have to do it.
Don't do it.
Also, crypto is risky. You could lose what you put in.
For other reasons.
We're headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.